Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday night. It's about 7 past the hour. I guess you know about the demonstrations planned around the country tomorrow in solidarity with the workers in Wisconsin. If you don't know about it, it's at various places around the internet, information. ThinkProgress.org is one place. I'm sure you have something probably bookmarked where you can get the information. If there is something going on in your city, I'd strongly recommend, if you have time tomorrow, to make your presence known. Just make your presence known. It's no big deal. I mean, you don't have to do all kinds of crazy stuff. All you have to do is show up, you know, just show up. You can do crazy stuff if you want to, but just show up, I think, is a good idea. I wanted to say something else about that. It got away from me, Kathy. Also, in addition to those demonstrations, tomorrow, don't forget, March 19th in Washington, D.C., there's going to be a civil action, an action of civil disobedience outside in Lafayette Park across the street from the White House. I'm going to participate in that. I'm sure there are a lot of people who also are going to participate in that. So if you can make it to D.C. on March 19th, which is a Saturday, I'll see you there. Right? This hour is sponsored by Stephanie Branford. Her message, in memory of Dwayne McDuffie, who understood there's nothing more subversive than a black superhero. From his mod, Stephanie, also known as Mutate 20. That's kind of scary. Thanks, Stephanie. That's great. Stephanie Branford is the sponsor for this hour. In memory of Dwayne McDuffie, who understood there's nothing more subversive than a black superhero. Boy, is that the truth. Isn't that the truth? From his mod, Stephanie, a.k.a. Mutate 20. Good stuff. excuse me. I got somebody sent me to a website. Benedict at Large sent me to a website today. Luminous Page. Luminouspage.blogspot.com. And I got there, and there's an essay written by a woman named Brandy Martin. You got to hear this. She's an art teacher. Listen to this. Dear Twitter users, boiling with anger about forced subsidization of unionized teachers. I've taught art for 17 years. I've complained about certain things at work, but I've never regretted my profession. We all knew what we were signing up for when we chose our jobs. I knew I wouldn't get rich, but I knew I'd have summers off and a steady paycheck. So did you, actually. The summer thing is an antiquated agrarian anachronism. Read, not new. So please don't act outraged at this fresh, new insult. If you became a banker, a waitress, or IT guy, or whatever you do, whatever job you have that doesn't seem to mind your constant vigilance of pro-union tweets, you knew it had 2 weeks vacation a year. You knew the salary and the risk of advancement. When I started teaching in 1993, my contract said $20,000 a year. I thought that sounded amazing. I thought a bulldozer with a haystack of $20,000 bills was going to pull up and dump them all over me. When I started getting paid, I had to take a weekend job at Carmen's Pizza, taking phone orders for delivery so I could pay my bills. But I had no complaint. To earn this $20,000 a year, I taught art on a cart to 850 kids at 3 different schools every week. Almost every kid was on free lunch. My budget was $1.50 per child per year. Now, this is actually possible. My classes applauded when I entered the room every single time. I took up Spanish lessons, again at my own expense, so that I could say, ¿Quieres papel amarillo o azul? Doblao es, y desdoblao, okay? Cortalo, bueno. So that the new kid, off the boat, so to speak, wasn't terrified that they had to talk to the gringa teacher. We made puppets, paper mache, tissue snowflakes, and lots of chalk and tempera paintings. I loved going to work every day. I loved festooning each little school with the happy art. I enjoyed telling wide-eyed kids I actually lived in the dark, mouse-poopy art closet down the hall. I worked in the lowest-paying district in a 300-mile radius, but I didn't care. I felt needed, and I knew I was making some little souls mourning every time I went to work. I feel less and less that way when I read angry tweets and newspaper comments about my profession. Maybe I shouldn't read what angry tax-paying trolls write and say on the internet, but I'm so appalled I keep checking to see if it's still there. I'm told I'm ungrateful. I read that I am greedy or a tool of greedy union bosses. I am a selfish son of a bitch, one guy informed me when I was trying to explain the details and the facts of current legislation. I read that everyone's life is going down the toilet because I am breaking their backs. I've ruined everything. Everything is ruined! Please know it did not feel like ruining everything. It felt like sitting in a tiny plastic chair at a tiny table, cajoling an autistic preschooler into brushing watercolor across a white wax face I had pre-drawn, then watching him laugh at the big reveal. It felt like receiving a drawing as a gift from a talented little boy who drew like an adult but suffered crippling arthritis in his hands and for whom I had arranged free classes. It felt like crossing a name off a roster because she and her grandmother had been raped and killed in their house near the school. It felt like a million little notes shoved into my hands and pockets from eager little people who only came up to my waist. It felt like tamales from mothers who could not speak much English but beamed widely as they handed the foil package over. Now at the high school level, it feels like alarmed inquiries following my every absence. It feels like a crowd around my desk, like emails during the evenings and weekends. It feels like a 6'2" kid standing up from his computer animation to announce loudly, "I am an artist!" It feels like kids who come back during their lunches in study halls, spending half the day in my room and sometimes come to school only for my class. This according to their parents. It feels like emails and letters, even letters later, saying I was the best teacher they ever had. It feels like all my letters of recommendation, begging for college admission or a scholarship for another fine young person. It feels like trust or just relief that I listen. So guess what? I am rich, you miserable, bitter harpies. But you have it all wrong. Just because your job sucks and you can't wait to get out of there every day doesn't mean that's how I feel making my living. It's a shame, but it's a world of your own making. If you loved your job, I doubt you'd be investing this kind of time degrading mine. In contrast, I enjoy the luxurious power of changing kids' minds about school every day, even on 8-year-old computers that run on my sheer will alone. So do it. Go ahead. Reduce my pension. Make me poor, since I don't qualify for Social Security. Make my medicine unaffordable. Make my raise contingent upon proof that my art lesson somehow improved state math scores. Continue firing at my feet to see how long you can make me dance. It still won't change the fact that life did not work out as you planned, and you're now a bitter little turd. And I will still effing love my job because I am rocking this for all the right reasons. After you take every tool and incentive and support away from me and millions like me, you won't suddenly have anything great that you don't already have. And then you will feel terribly disappointed to find out that this isn't a scam after all. Whether decorated or destroyed inside every school, we run on something you can't legislate, isolate, measure, or destroy, much to your inarticulate, all caps, despair. It's love, dumbass. If you'd bother to volunteer at the little school down the street, you could have a sample. I won't even tell the kids what you wrote about their teacher. Brandy Martin, published yesterday. At luminouspage.blogspot.com. Remember that name, Brandy Martin. That is one hell of a blog post. Thank you, Brandy. We'll be right back.
You who are on the road must have a code that you can live by. And so become yourself, because the past
is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
The hour. Earlier today, Sheila Samples at Op-Ed News, one of the editors there, one of the big shots over at Op-Ed News. She is. She's one of the big shots over there. She sends me a lot of stuff. She sent this. This is from CBS News, by the way. Former President George W. Bush has canceled a scheduled speaking appearance at the YPO Global Leadership Summit after learning that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange was invited to address the same summit. Mr. Bush's spokesman David Scherzer said in a statement that Mr. Bush accepted an invitation to speak at the Denver summit 6 months ago. The former president was slated to speak at the event tomorrow. Scherzer said, quote, this week, upon learning that Julian Assange had recently been invited to address the same summit, President Bush decided to cancel his appearance, Scherzer said. The former president has no desire to share a forum with a man who has willfully and repeatedly done great harm to the interests of the United States, end quote. When I read that, I just about lost my goddamn lunch for the past 6 weeks. This punk-ass Bush says he doesn't want to share a forum with a man who has willfully and repeatedly done great harm to the interests of the United States. What the hell has Bush done? I'm going to tell you what Bush has done in a minute when we come back after the next break. Young President's Organization, the Global Leadership Summit. Now, if Bush could read, he would understand that Julian Assange has just been renditioned to Sweden, where he's going to face charges in that country of sexual assault. Does this mean Bush can never attend a forum where he himself is speaking? If he doesn't want to be with somebody who has willfully and repeatedly done great harm to the interests of the United States, I don't believe this guy. Ryan in Illinois wrote, the Bush family did more damage to this country than any website founder ever did. Prescott Bush helped fund the Nazis, which created a huge enemy for America. George Sr. was part of Reagan's dismantling of the middle class. W. is an admitted war criminal who only remains untried because of President Gerald Ford II in the White House. Let's take a vote, Ryan says. Let's ask the people from New Orleans. Who has caused them more harm, Bush or Julian Assange? Let's ask the mothers and fathers of troops who died in the wars built on lies, Bush or Assange? Let's ask the unemployed whose jobs were shipped overseas as a result of Republican trickle-down-your-leg economics, Bush or Assange? Telling the world about wrongdoings cannot be a larger sin than committing them, can it? In an Orwellian world that feels 27 years removed from 1984, I guess in the informant is the criminal. Ryan in Illinois. Now, when we come back after the break, in a couple of minutes, there's something else I want to share with you. This is Bush's legacy, part of his legacy in Iraq. Sent to me by Sherry in New Jersey. When you think like I do that there's nothing left that can really rip your guts out, And then you look at the video that Sherry sent regarding children in Iraq. You realize that no matter how much you bear witness to, if you're a normal human being, it never scabs you over to the point where you can't be further moved by seeing this video that was sent to me. But when I read this business about George W. Bush, says he won't share a forum or a stage with Julian Assange because of all the damage that Assange has done to the United States, repeated. I can't. I can't even talk. I start to choke up. I can't talk. So, since I can't, let's just play some music here. We'll take a break. We're going to have a podcast trivia bottom of the next hour. So stick around for that. Not now. Bottom of the next hour, we're going to give away at least one-year subscription to Molloy Podcast commercial-free downloads. So stick around for that. All right. We'll be back in a couple of minutes and talk about part of George Bush's legacy. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
With Mike Molloy.
25 before the hour, George W. Bush is bitching and moaning and pissing in his pants because he didn't want to share a forum or a stage with Julian Assange because he didn't want to be around people, he says, who have caused the United States so much grief. I don't believe this guy. There are protests, you know, going on in Iraq. Whatever misery exists in Iraq for the past 8 years, past 7 years, as a result of George W. Bush's actions and his old man too. I mean, both of these rancid Nazi lovers. But if you go to Reuters.com, R-E-U-T-E-R-S, Reuters.com, and look at the video story about orphans joining in the Iraq protests over food and shelter, right? The headline says, orphans join protests in Iraq to call for a better standard of living, Deborah Luderbach reports. And then the video's there. Just go to Reuters.com. Anyway, let me share with you a little bit of what it says. Fadel Mohammed Ra'ad, 10 years old. Do you have a niece, a nephew, a grandkid, a child, 10? Huh? 10. Fadel, or Fatal, is one of thousands of children who have lost their parents to the endless violence that has been gripping Iraq since the 2003 U.S.-led invasion. He says, quote, my parents were killed in an explosion at the center of Baghdad last year, leaving me and my sister to no one. I have relatives, but all of them have refused to take us in. We were forced to work to survive. Children, like many other civilians, are the silent victims of violence in war-torn Iraq. a sociologist there, Haydar Hassan Karim, says, quote, violence in Iraq has vast characteristics, sectarian violence, resistance against U.S. troops, traditional behaviors, and the fight against the hungry. End quote. The Ministry of Labor and Social Affairs estimates that around 4.5 million children are orphans. Nearly 70% of them lost their parents since the invasion and the ensuing violence. Think of this, or don't. From the total number, around 600,000 children are living in the streets without a house or food to survive. Only 700 children are living in the 18 orphanages existing in the country, lacking their most essential needs. An Iraqi Red Crescent employee, like the Red Cross, refusing to give his name, said, quote, unfortunately, the budget allocated to projects that help street children and orphans is decreasing day in and day out. Worse still, he says, almost no non-government organization is dedicating itself to this group of kids who are subject to trafficking and sexual abuse in the streets. End quote. Hamed Abdel Sattar, 9 years old, has to spend hours at the streets moving from one traffic light to another, trying to make a living for him and his seven-year-old sister. The nine-year-old says, quote, my father was killed during the invasion and my mother 7 months later in a suicide attack. We don't know where our relatives are and had to steal to get enough money to buy candles and sell them today. I know what I did is wrong, but we had to eat. I think that God will forgive me, says the nine-year-old. He adds, sometimes I cry alone and don't eat to leave it for my sister, but one day I will be rich and will help all orphans in Iraq. End quote. Living together at an abandoned shop on the outskirts of Baghdad, the young boy, nine, says he was once sexually abused while trying to prevent his sister, who is seven, from being raped. Closing his eyes to the ugly memory, he says, quote, they took me because I helped her to escape. This nine-year-old was taken to a local orphanage weeks after his mother was killed, but ran away after constant aggression from the local employees. The boy says, they hate us, they treat us like animals, and the food was bad. Everything was dirty, and I couldn't see my sister being hurt anymore. I decided to take her and search for a place to stay. The streets are much better than that hell. Riyad and his sister, who were recently moved to one orphanage in Baghdad, confirms the same pattern. He says, quote, life here isn't easy, and most people working at this place are cruel with us children. During a military raid in an area northwest of Baghdad in June 2007, U.S. troops discovered more than 20 naked and abused boys at the Al-Hanan orphanage. A senior official at the government-run Al-Hanan orphanage told the reporter that all staffs have since been changed. He says, quote, Iraqi orphanages have a bad history of torture and bad treatments, but we are trying to change this. However, we need huge investments to comfort these children, and after that we will be able to receive more street children. End quote. He argues that children are being looked after with more care and tenderness, though the children say otherwise. Karim, the sociologist, warns that many children will be left scarred for the rest of their lives. Innocent children are paying for being part of this scenario, he says. First, they lose their parents, and then they have to live in places with people who do not care about their psychological well-being. Jesus Christ. I mean, I can't read any more of this. I really can't. The person sent this to me said, Mike, sorry to leave this on your doorstep. How in the hell can the American public get to see this? It's a video. The American public will not see it, Sherry. Damn it. If the American people were shown just this video alone, I would think game over. Well, those filthy bastards from Wall Street and the too big to fails, the Fed, and members of our government have their hands on trillions for their private enjoyment and consumption. And for the neocon vermin government of Israel, I ask them, what if these were your children? Is that what it has to happen to make it stop? This is what the fake war on terror has done. I'm sure it's the same in Afghanistan. Think of all the money no-bid contractors like Lockheed and Halliburton and Boeing and GE and all the oil companies have made and continue to do. Blackwater mercenaries. Shock and awe. And speaking of trillions, how much is still being spent on Iraq to build bases and embassies? The only reason I bring up money is how can they sit on their 24-karat gold toilet seats and let this happen to children? I know those kind of people don't care. That's why what is happening now in our country is happening, and globally too. The leaders are starving their people and walking around with $1 billion in chump change in their wallets, and our brave military are still dead. Hey, America, how do you like the democracy we brought to Iraq? All you people who still applaud the likes of Cheney and Rumsfeld, Rummy is out pushing his new book, I hear. There's so many bastards that we know and don't know who are on the very big list with the two war criminals mentioned above. Way too long a list. Well, I don't have to explain and go back over all this with you. You know what happened. Remember Andy Card slipping and saying in August 2002, you don't introduce a new product in August. Yeah, that's how they looked at the war in Iraq, the invasion of Iraq. I'm tired, Mike. I don't know what to do to help these children, and not just the children of Iraq and Afghanistan, but all the children who have nothing in their bellies and no one to love them, and all the rest of it. You know what I mean. I can hear it every night. You're on the radio. The big question is, how do we get this kind of news to the American people at large? Thanks for letting me rant. Sherry in New Jersey. How do you get it out to the American public? I don't know. You can't do like they did in Clockwork Orange and sit the little criminal bastard down in the theater and prop his eyes open and make him look at videos like this. You can't do it. How many Americans that are not private contractors or private military or military, government military, how many Americans will ever travel to Iraq, will ever see this? We don't pay any attention to this. You don't have to go to Iraq, although we are responsible for the kids in Iraq. You can go to cities in the United States. Now, granted, you're not going to see 9-year-old orphans out hustling in the street corners, but you can go to Mexico City and see it. You can go to Honduras and see it. How to get the American public to acknowledge this? You can't. You can't do it. We Americans would never acknowledge the destruction that we have brought to so many countries and so many people. And just the mere fact of bringing it up, I'm sure right now there's just a bunch of right-wing troll bastards are composing their little misspelled emails to send to me. You goddamn communists, if you don't like America, why don't you leave it? You know, that kind of trash. By the way, this hour has been sponsored by Stephanie Branford. I forgot to say that, didn't I, coming back? So let me say it again. Stephanie Branford, her message, in memory of Dwayne McDuffie, who understood there's nothing more subversive than a black superhero. From his mod, Stephanie, a.k.a. Mutate 20. Oh, by the way, the Spanish government is reconsidering issuing arrest warrants and attempting to prosecute U.S. war criminals. You can get information on this by going to the website warisacrime.org. That's the old after Downing Street.org, but they changed your name. warisacrime.org. warisacrime.org. There is an effort now being made. The judges, a full panel of judges in the Audiencia Nacional, that's like our Supreme Court in Spain, those judges rejected a Spanish prosecutor's effort to stop an investigation into the role of U.S. officials for torture in Guantanamo. So maybe, just maybe, Bush and Cheney and the rest of these slime will be brought to justice, you think?
Miles on miles, hands and knees. Ain't no doubt about it.
yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. And again, thanks to Stephanie Brandford, who is the sponsor of this first hour. Her message in memory of Dwayne McDuffie, who understood there's nothing more subversive than a black superhero, from his mod, Stephanie, also known as Mutate 20. All right. Thank you, Stephanie. From Prairie 2, pizza will overcome. They say the oil market has stabilized, but the price is up again today, up 17% in the past week. Gas continues to climb, up 45 cents since last fall, and expected to top out somewhere north of $4, maybe $5. But for a reality check, here you are. We have a record inventory of gasoline on hand, and consumption is still lackluster as we linger on the edge of another Great Depression. So much for the price being determined by supply and demand. Some Wall Street bankers are warning that if oil hits 120 a barrel, that the world economy will collapse. That's possible. But what they're really concerned about is selling more derivatives as insurance against price spikes. They're perfectly willing to drive the panic to make a quick couple of billion. Remember, we have record inventories, and Libya is only 1% of total world supply. Consumer confidence is up, but that is just a survey. Real numbers are starting to come in, and the GDP for last year has been revised downwards significantly, from 4.4 growth down to 4.1 for the fourth quarter. Those economists that do get surveyed, the ones that are always wrong, they predicted the number would be revised up. Still, this was the best growth since 2006, when the blunders of the Bush administration were really starting to take hold. Republicans are determined to drive down public worker wages. It's likely they will succeed, and this will be another large stone piled on the chest of the American economy. Continued outsourcing, systematic driving down of private sector wages, skyrocketing fuel prices, soaring prices of essential commodities, and ever-increasing looting by the kleptocracy. Well, you could write a new chapter to The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Actually, he did recommend weakening your enemy by trade, if possible. There are rumors that Governor Mubarak in Wisconsin is going to send in 400 state police to clear the Capitol building overnight Friday in advance of an expected 100,000 protesters Saturday. Nationwide, labor organizers hope to turn out 1 million solidarity protesters in all 50 states. Pizza orders have now come into that little pizza shop closest to the Capitol in Madison from 55 foreign countries, including a research station on Antarctica. Pizza will overcome. PrairieNumeral2.com. Visit his website. If you have not a whole lot planned tomorrow, if you would just take a moment and find out where in your vicinity, your city, your state, there is a protest that in solidarity with the workers, not just in Madison, Wisconsin, but the workers all across the country. If you know where there is going to be one, please show up. If you don't, start one yourself. We are going to be, we being Kathy and Molly and me, we're going to be out and about tomorrow, and we are going to go downtown Atlanta to the state capitol and protest. Of course, this is Georgia, so there's no telling what we might expect. But Molly has to understand at a very young age, I guess, right? I think all kids do. I think kids should be made aware. You know, because right-wingers are telling their children, look at those dirty... I remember 40 years ago, it was, look at those dirty hippies. They don't work, they do drugs and have sex all day. And look at them! Look at those dirty hippies! Is that 40 years ago? Actually, it was it's more like 45, it got up on 50 years ago, right? The mid-60s? Oh, my God. But if you have, if you're a rational human being, if you love your family, your children, your nieces and nephews, your grandkids, whatever, you know, let them know. Take them with you. Take them with you. Molly had a little sign that she carried around for months. It was called Women for Obama. Remember that rally? I took it away from her once it became clear that that was a waste of time. Okay, we're going to take a break and come back. And at the bottom of the hour coming up, we will have podcast trivia. That's in about half an hour or thereabouts. So stick around for that. And also when we come back, I'm going to explain to you, not that I don't mean explain to you, you already know, but I'm going to share with you something that somebody sent me today. Who sent me this? Probably, I don't know who sent it. But it's why the right, well, nobody sent it to me. I got this out of the newspaper today. Why the right wing really hates government bailouts. That's my opinion. Why they really hate government bailouts. And I'll tell you why when we come back. Okay? Stick around. Don't go away. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. And this hour is sponsored by Todd Telford. Here's Todd's message. For those who want to support Wisconsin's public employees from afar, ask your local progressive group to employ Mini, M-I-N-I, protesting techniques in a curbside activism campaign to show your local ditto heads the diabolical truths about Governor Walker that Rush will never utter. Go to miniprotests.com. That's M-I-N-I, protests.com. For more information on how you can set up your own local protest in only a couple of hours. All right, do that. Thanks, Todd. We'll mention this again a little bit later in the program. Do you remember when the decision was made to bail out General Motors, to give them tax money? And a lot of people just went kind of berserk. about the government doing that. As a matter of fact, they called it government motors. I think in a cynical mood, I said, hey, look, capitalism says if you can't make it, fail. I didn't mean it should fail. I just meant that's what capitalism dictates. You know, if you don't have bootstraps for 50, 60,000 employees, screw you. Go out of business. Let everybody go on welfare. What? There's no more welfare? Let them starve. What? There's nobody to pick up the dead bodies out of the street? Oh, well, it must be Detroit. So, in the New York Times business section today, General Motors, which nearly collapsed from the weight of its debts 2 years ago before reorganizing in a government-sponsored bankruptcy, said on Thursday that it earned $4.7 billion in 2010, the most in more than a decade. It was the first profitable year since 2004 from GM, which became publicly traded this past November, ending a string of years in which total losses, or losses total about $90 billion. The improvement was a result of eliminating debt during and after bankruptcy and years of effort at reducing factory output, cutting labor costs, and developing more enticing cars and trucks, okay? Now, there's a lot in that sentence that will tend to piss off a market socialist like me. But listen to this. As a result of its performance, General Motors said 45,000 union workers, 45,000 union workers would receive profit-sharing checks averaging $4,300 each. The most ever. This is why the right-wingers hated the bailout of General Motors. They hated it. Because there was always a chance it would work. And if it worked, you know, whether you and I agree with the whole idea from a political standpoint right now is kind of immaterial. It really is. But General Motors is doing a profit sharing with its 45,000 union. That's right, union, you right-wing troll bastards. It's 45,000 union workers will receive checks averaging $4,300, the most ever. Now, okay, the cynics in the audience can immediately send me an email and say, well, Mike, how much did the workers lose? It's a two-tiered system. The new workers coming in don't make $40 an hour. They make $18. And I can agree with you about all of that. This doesn't change my attitude about the overarching story here. I just wanted to share it with you to let you know that this is why the right-wingers hate it. Because now 45,000 union workers, oh my God, they're going to get average of $4,300 apiece. General Motors showed a $4.7 billion profit in 2010. Now, I wonder if the pig man, Rush Limbaugh, and the rest of these right-wing sons of bitches will refer to General Motors as government motors. You know, they went public. They went back public back in November again. This year, General Motors will introduce the Chevrolet Sonic and the Buick Verano, an upscale adaptation of the Chevrolet Cruze, whose highway fuel economy will top 40 miles a gallon. GM has also had such high demand for crossover vehicles like the Chevy Equinox that it has struggled to make enough of them. Now, I know, let's all get off of the gasoline-powered cars. I understand. I'm just saying. This is why the right wing hated so vehemently. It was so nasty. The sons of bitches, do you remember? Let the union workers go down the toilet. To hell with the union workers. They're the ones who caused the General Motors, right? They're the ones who caused. Just the other night, I quoted something to you out of the New York Times, where workers in Wisconsin were saying, well, You know, this whole problem is because the unions have screwed everything up. The unions have made it hard for me to get a job. The unions this, the unions that, which is a goddamn lie. So I just wanted to share it with you. General Motors posts a profit of $4.7 billion for 2010. I realize that's compared to the oil companies, compared to ExxonMobil, that's what they make in, a month? It is. But for General Motors, remember how the right-wingers were just, you know, dancing on his coffin, just happy as pigs in swill, because it meant thousands upon thousands of union workers would be thrown into the streets. Remember that? Government bailout! Oh, no! Blah, blah, blah! Remember? Of course you do. You remember this. You remember. So as a result of what happened in 2010, General Motors said 45,000 union workers would receive profit-sharing checks. Profit-sharing? Son of a bitch, that sounds like socialism. Profit-sharing check? What? You mean on top of their wages? On top of whatever benefits they still get? They're going to get an average, each worker will get a check averaging $4,300? What? Just wanted to pass that on. Now, I guess you have to factor in those things I was just mentioning. The two-tiered wage plan now. Didn't the United Auto Workers agree that new people going into the factories to produce cars and trucks would not be paid what the old workers were paid, and that through layoffs or just attrition, that eventually all the workers would be making $20 an hour instead of 40. But still. So to you right-wingers who laughed your asses off and made such a deal about a negative deal about workers' jobs being saved because of government action. And then, of course, GM, of course they restructured. Of course they got rid of a lot of debt. And they paid off whatever money was loaned to them. And now their workers, 45,000 of their workers, are involved in profit sharing. Goddamn socialism, right?
One flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Todd Telford. Go to the website miniprotests.com. For ways, information on how you can set up your own local protest in a couple of hours. Todd Telford says, for those that want to support Wisconsin's public employees from afar, ask your local progressive group to employ mini protesting techniques in a curbside activism campaign. Todd, thank you. Appreciate the sponsorship. Tim in Denver is going to wear his Malloy t-shirt tomorrow in Denver at the rally. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, we need to sell some T-shirts or we're not going to be on the air too much longer, right? Can we stay on the air just by selling T-shirts? I don't think so. What? Not unless we charge more?
Yeah.
No, that's all right. I'm sure people will buy podcast subscriptions.
Sponsorship,
that's what I'm talking about. Matt in St. Louis wrote to Mike, right now, I'm so pissed. I'm usually the perceived calm one in the group, but enough is enough. It's one of those little things with the union issue that your average liberal can't think about too hard or they'll explode with rage. Meditating on the last few days, and you come to this conclusion. In a normal world, the second that phone call went viral, Scott Walker, the one that he thought he was talking to one of the Koch brothers, Scott Walker would have resigned or would be run out of the country, or better yet, immediately jailed, but he's not. Didn't even seem to ruffle his hair, even when Greta on Fox grilled him. Expletive deleted by me. The Republicans are not backing down in Wisconsin at all. Well, really, it's the oil barons who are not backing down and corporate America who's not backing down. Their plans are screwed up, but they are of the mindset, we get what we want. And now, after all the effing public outcry, they're still the little effing smug bastards that they have been since November. That is not good. People were trying to appeal to everyone's sense of decency in this argument, all-out war. These blanks almost seem like behind closed doors that they say to each other, ah, they thought they could appeal to our humanity. Ah! Expletive deleted, expletive deleted, expletive deleted. Good Lord. Matt, you curse more than I do. He goes on, I'm really worried. I've never seen them implement such agendas with absolute, definitive, national, all hands on deck, and we're going to do this no matter what anybody says. It's the Koch brothers on the phone that are standing firm. And they've told old Scott, we stand firm, you stand firm. Oh, my God, I can sense so much sinister blank in the air. It's my half-baked theory that all humans, on average, are low-grade psychics, and liberals are especially sensitive to their environment in this way. You can tell, this was talked about, debated, rehashed, organized for years, and they all met in California for one last time last month. Was that deal where they all got together in, yeah, outside of Palm Springs, that's right. This coordinated attack is like when your Air Force bomber has been sent an alphanumeric code, you enter it into the decryptor, receive another set of code, then refer to the little brown envelope located next to your cockpit seat, open the envelope, and now you have your atomic bombing operational orders. All radio contact will be severed, no turning back. Let's hope that effing A-bomb detonates before release. Whew. I had to get that out. People are still not getting it, I believe, in general. Peace out. Have a great show, Matt in St. Louis. MoveOn.org has a protest lookup page. Anyone enter a zip code and you get information on protests in your area. MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org. Chuck, northeast of San Diego, says, I'll be at the San Diego County Administration Building. Chuck in, is it Poway? Poway? California. Poway, California. Okay, there you go. MoveOn. MoveOn.org. And you should be able to find it. MoveOn.org. All right, we have a break here. We will come back. Oh, when we come back, we're going to open up the lines. We're going to do podcast trivia as soon as we come back after the break, okay? We're going to come back with the wonderful podcast trivia music. I hope we will get some people on the phone here. Oh, they're already ringing. Okay, the number is 877-996-2556. This is for podcast trivia. Stick around.
So why?
for podcast trivia here on the Malloy program. All you have to do is get the right answer to a very simple question, and you will win a one-year subscription to Malloy program podcast downloads to be in your email every morning, commercial-free. Has a retail value of $59.60. Woo! Which works out to 25 cents a show when it's annuitized. I love to say annuitized. All right. Are we ready? I think we are. Seth is in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hey, Seth.
Hey, Mike. How you been?
I'm doing fine. Are you, you're on the Ustream group?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Are you ready to give it a shot?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Seth, let's start the music. Here's your question. MSNBC's... Oops. Down just a little bit, Madam Producer. MSNBC's early morning host, Joe Scarborough, who's a former Republican congressman from the Florida Panhandle, blasted, I think it was today, a right-wing media figure as, quote, losing it before our eyes, end quote. With Scarborough talking about A, Rush Limbaugh, B, Sean Hannity, C, Glenn Beck, or D, Bill O'Reilly.
I'm
going to
take a guess as Glenn Beck.
Glenn Beck, you're absolutely right. All right, good guess, Seth. If you go to, I would imagine it's up at Think Progress or Crooks and Liars, but it runs about 7 or 8 minutes. If you want to see an astonishing piece of video, watch Joe Scarborough go after Glenn Beck. It's pretty amazing. All right, Seth, hold on. Kathy will get the information from you. Thanks a lot for participating, okay?
Yeah, you too, Ryan.
All right, man. Hold on. Don't go away. All right. Seth from the... Ustream. If you haven't gone to Ustream, .tv, that's where videocast, you should go. It's great fun. All right. A couple of emails here that I want to share with you. Maggie in Mount Shasta, California, writes regarding the kids in Iraq. Maggie writes, greed is good in America. Kids be damned. You can't show the video about kids in Iraq to most Americans, especially those who call themselves family values conservatives. They simply will not watch or will not believe that our wars have anything to do with creating suffering. After all, America can do no wrong. How did our country get such a huge number of numbnuts and pigs? I can't believe this mentality. But it is an epidemic in America. I'm going to Medford, Oregon tomorrow to protest. Mount Shasta, California is closer to Oregon than Sacramento or the Bay Area. Should be interesting since Oregon is full of irrational NRA idiots and less government lemmings. Maggie in Mount Shasta. Yeah, but not Portland, right? Oh, you're going to Medford. Okay, I guess that's not Portland, right? All right, Maggie. Give them hell. All right, this is from Betsy, who is in the thick of the demonstrations in Madison. She writes, "Let me get this quickly. I'm tired. Last night the assembly forced a 1 a.m. vote that passed. I was with people today who were there. They said everyone was milling around, Republicans and Democrats talking, taking a break. One by one, the Repugs sat down and within seconds voted 51 for the bill. There was literally less than a minute for the Dems to respond. They didn't even know what was going on. It was all very orchestrated by the Repugs to force a vote. A third of the Dems didn't even get to vote. The Repugs then ran under police guard out of the Capitol. This will go to court. So unconstitutional. Providing the judge wasn't appointed by Shrub, we may stand a chance. There are going to be so many legal battles from this, quote, event, end quote. Rumors flying that the governor tried to get rid of the protesters today via the police, and the police said no. Walker denies it, but he's a liar, so who knows? The Wisconsin Professional Police Association members are camping out tonight in the Capitol to show support. You should see the cops. They smile and laugh. We have such fun. I spent about 2 hours outside the governor's office today, caught a glimpse of him, and started another show your face chant. It's such fun. Anyone within driving distance should definitely come here for a time. Not tomorrow. Way too busy and crowded. Marches down State Street and all over. Roads will be closed. And blah, 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 blah. Rumor is they're closing the Capitol for a few hours on Sunday to clean, but will they let us back in? I think they have to. If you want to come during the week, let me know. If we can work for a time that is good for everyone. They've closed all but two entrances to the Capitol. Some say that is fascist, but in order to protect Capitol workers and the protesters, I believe it's necessary. If you do come, three layers, coat, sweatshirt or sweater, t-shirt, and backpack to store all the clothes you shed, and a water bottle, and gloves. It goes from 15 wind chill outside to 85 inside. The walls of the Capitol are covered with notices and such. You really should see it. I doubt we'll see anything like this again in our lifetime. I have a feeling the people of this nation are going to be forever thanking Wisconsin, home of the first unions, caretaker of the preservation of the unions, for a very long time. Later. So good, tired. Betsy. And from Kathy in Maine, the subject line is, "Where's Maine?" Kathy writes, "Mike, it's not like we in Maine aren't used to being ignored by the mainstream media. After all, we are simply that big, unknown state that sits above and beside the other New England states. We get grouped in unless it's a discussion of sensational winter weather, which we are currently still experiencing, or some heartwarming moose or blueberry story. We are the big unknown moose or blueberry story. We are a big landmass with a small population, easy to ignore. Even now, as Wisconsin, Ohio, and Indiana suffer the assault on workers' rights in the news every day, our extremist Republic thug governor is flying low under the radar. As our legislature prepares to resume their session, Governor LePage has been successfully keeping his plans for dismantling the state secret. The second part of his plan is yet to be revealed, and we have been left for the past weeks just wondering what favorite Republic thug assaults he will hurl out of the statehouse. Will he gut workers' rights to bargain? Will he fillet the anti-discrimination laws? Will he dismantle overtime laws along with workers' compensation? One thing is certain, LePage is cut from the same cloth as Governors Walker and Kasich. We already know LePage has proposed union busting, so-called right-to-work legislation, and is working hard to destroy all existing contracts between public employers and employees. It's like LePage has the same Republican mantra playing in his Tea Party brain. We have the power to crush them! We have the power to crush them! We wait with abated breath, but we are not unprepared. Soon, whether the mainstream news notices or not, we will be experiencing the same full-frontal assault from an extremist Republic thug party that believes their fondest dreams of right-wing hegemony have just come true right here in the wilds of Maine. These thugs have had decades to hone their tactics of shutting out their counterparts in various ways and ramming through votes in the middle of the night. There's nothing even remotely ethical about the way they operate. Their hate for working families is matched only by their complete and utter adoration for power and money. We know what it is. We've seen it on so many levels throughout the past three decades. It's just going to take a monumental and sustained push back to derail this well-funded oncoming speeding train. I pray we all continue to be up to the fight of each and every battle in this war on workers, women, and children. Kathy in Maine. And Gordon in Oklahoma City writes, Mike, for a number of reasons, I'm an admirer of the late Clarence Darrow. Although most remember Darrow for several high-profile trials, including the so-called Scopes Monkey Trial, Darrow also was a fierce and brilliant advocate for labor. He said this, quote, with all their faults, trade unions have done more for humanity than any other organization of men that ever existed. They have done more for decency, for honesty, for education, for the betterment of the race, for the developing of character in man than any other association of men. Gordon. All right, we're going to take a break and come back and maybe take a phone call or two. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And to rearrange the way you think, hesitate, lose control, and you will sink. Think fast.
Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Ten before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Todd Telford. His message, for those who want to support Wisconsin's public employees from afar, ask your local progressive group to employ mini-protesting techniques in a curbside activism campaign to show your local ditto heads the diabolical truths about Governor Walker that Rush will never utter. Go to miniprotests.com, miniprotests.com for more information on how you can set up your own local protest in only a couple of hours. That's from Todd. Thanks, Todd. Tom is in Arizona, Bullhead City. Yes, Tom?
Yeah, actually, I'm in El Monte, California today because I'm going to a rally tomorrow in downtown L.A. at City Hall.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the closest one was Las Vegas, but the suggested one was in Phoenix. But, you know, I thought that I would go to the biggest one in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And it's, I got here, and it's raining and it's cold, but I'm going to show up. And in respect to the guy that sponsored your hour, I do those mini protests. And they shoot at me. They shoot at me on the corner across from Smith by the schoolyard. I mean, we have like there's maybe seven of us, right?
Did you shoot back?
No, my congressman friend suggested that we should all take guns tomorrow to the protest. I said no. He's just tongue in cheek. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
okay.
You know, remember one year ago, when I called up, I said, if I can scratch three people together, right, against these teabaggers, when they protested with guns about health care. Remember?
Say that. I'm sorry. Say it again, Tom.
Remember a year ago when the teabaggers were wearing guns to rally?
Yes.
And they had... we were talking about health care.
Right.
We were talking about health care reform.
Right.
And they were wearing guns to rallies.
Oh,
remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, I am jazzed. I am pumped. I'm going to piss on a teabag tomorrow. I'm going to take a bag of teabags, and I'm just going to pee on them.
You are?
In public, no, I'm not, because I'll get caught. No, but I mean, maybe burn them. How's that?
Well, you know, be careful with that. Certain acts of civil disobedience will get you arrested. If you're willing to get arrested, if you're willing to get arrested, okay.
No, because I got too much at stake here. You know, I love me. You know, I'm part of the I Love Me Tom campaign. But you know, the thing is, I want to make a statement. Walk like an Egyptian. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
Walk like an Egyptian.
Don't sing it, Tom. Don't sing it.
Well, during those days, I was going walk with an erection.
No, Tom. Come on, come on, Tom. Don't. This is still, you know, it's kind of the family hour. I mean, okay, that's cool. I'll tell you what, Tom. Call me Monday and let me know how it went. Okay. All right. Thanks, Tom. God. Every time Tom calls in, I just sit here and go, Seth in Gulfport, Mississippi, the trivia winner. Oh, I'm sorry, you wanted to keep talking. All right, Seth, hey.
Yeah, the reason why I was calling was because you were talking about the oil spill from yesterday.
Oh, yeah,
And I was actually near when it happened. I figured you probably wanted some questions to be asked, so I figured call in and see if I could answer them for you.
Well, I think most of the things that are most disconcerting about that we've been covered. Mother Jones has provided some real good coverage for you know, what's going on down there, and I think two nights this week we did a bit of coverage. About the reports, I think it was in the New York Times, that people are still continuing to get sick from nobody knows from what, from the Corexit, some of the chemicals they dumped in the water. And then last night we were talking about the dolphin deaths, the baby dolphin, the dolphin calves that are washing up in Alabama.
Well, if I'd come in on that, that is true. I found some pictures on it.
Mm-hmm. And
it.
Go ahead.
The results look gruesome. I'm going to say it right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they talk about eating Gulf of Mexico seafood. I really feel badly for the people in. On the Mississippi Gulf Coast, Alabama, Florida, the whole area down there, who depended on the sea for their livelihood, they should be filing class action lawsuits against British Petroleum and against Halliburton and against all these companies that did this to them. But I will guarantee you, Seth, I am just not going to take the risk of eating seafood out of the Gulf of Mexico right now. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you better start praying for me because we just came back from dinner at a catfish house down in Hancock County.
Well, is it freshwater catfish?
I don't know, to be honest with you, but they were in it. But at the same time, I noticed something that they were going to be doing a price increase on their menu.
Hey,
because of demand.
All of a sudden, we're getting some horrendous. Where's that coming from? Pot that down, Kathy, or disconnect, or do something. Hear that? You don't hear it. Okay. My headphones are going off like somebody's, like it's raining. Oh, well. Seth, listen, man, I gotta go. Thanks. That's the music. Thanks, Seth. Congratulations on winning, and stay in touch. Stay in touch, all right? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. This hour is sponsored by John O'Connor. No, I'm sorry. Sponsored by Emiliano Zapata of Providence, Rhode Island. The message, my grandfather once said, it's better to die on your feet than live on your knees, truth seekers. Emiliano Zapata. Viva Zapata of Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks, Emiliano. Oh, my. Look who's here. Hello, Blue. Blue.
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
As we were saying before, we were so rudely interrupted a week or 10 days ago. The only point I was trying to make, I was still pretty affected by the whole experience of that day, but this woman was simply trying to make the point that there's no difference between murdering 2 million people in the ovens at Auschwitz and killing them in Iraq with bombs and white phosphorus.
Right.
But that's not really the reason I called them. I'm in Winnipeg, Manitoba at the moment.
Uh-huh.
And I tried calling you folks last night from Madison. What happened was that we're slowly making our way back to the land of wonder down under. And we came into Halifax on Tuesday night, I think it was, from Mildenhall in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't given a thought, really, to the whole idea of Madison. I mean, apart from paying attention to what was going on. But we got a load for Winnipeg here in Manitoba. And I've got a mate in Winnipeg, as a matter of fact, a guy named Jerry who has a charter business. He's got an amphibious aircraft. So I called this bloke up, and I said, look, I've had a bit of an automotive altercation with a Mercedes-Benz. I'm not in very good shape at the moment. But we're going to come into Winnipeg, and what do you think about the idea of going down to Madison? Because it's only about 500 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think that's a great idea, Blue. Let's do that. So we came into Winnipeg, and Jerry and his brothers, two huge blokes, somehow managed to load me into this albatross, and we flew down to Madison. And we couldn't stay very long because, frankly, I was about to chunder all over the place. I'm not in very good shape. But we went out into the streets. It was colder than hell, which is something I'm not used to.
Uh-huh.
And we were standing in front of the Capitol there, and two of the Democrats from the State Assembly came out, and they were talking to the crowd. They were very enthusiastic and very optimistic. Of course, they didn't know. None of us knew at the time. They were planning this midnight coup that I've been hearing about today.
Yeah.
So we moved on, and basically I'm being carried by these blokes because I can't walk very well at the moment.
Right.
We see these two people waving Danish flags, you know, the red and white Danish flags.
In Madison?
In Madison, yeah. So we walk over there, and it's these two Danish people. They're about 35 years old. They're on vacation in Minneapolis, and they thought it would be a great fun to come over and see what was going on in Madison as well.
Uh-huh.
So we're standing there, and they've got a bottle of schnapps. And, of course, it's freezing, and so they offered us the bottle of schnapps, and we all take some of the schnapps, and there are two guys with them in civilian clothes. They turned out to be firefighters, Wisconsin firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was sort of a street party going on there. And at one point, this cop comes by. A uniformed cop comes by. And so this Danish woman, of course, they spoke perfect English. She says, if the governor orders you to move the protesters out of the away from the Capitol, will you do that? And this bloke says, well, we have to follow our orders.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear to you, this woman says, just like the guards at the concentration camps.
Jesus, God.
And the guy says, Would you like to be arrested for creating a public disturbance?
Yeah, well, you know, the cops, from what I heard now, the police in Madison are not moving anybody. Some of them have joined the protests.
No, and that's good, but apparently this bloke didn't get the message, because then I piped up and I said, this woman is creating a public disturbance by talking to you about the situation. And so this bloke looks at me rather menacingly, and he says, would you like to be arrested for creating a public disturbance? So my friend Jerry says, okay, Blue, let's move along now, eh? And these blokes pick me up and carry me off. And so we stayed in town for about, I don't know, another hour and a half or so. And then I wasn't feeling at all well. So we went back to the aircraft and came back here in a minute to Winnipeg. And we're going on to Vancouver, and then eventually we're going to wind up back in Melbourne, I hope, soon.
Well, where are you going to be March 19th? We attended tentative plans, you and I, meeting in D.C., Washington, D.C.
If I can get around, I'll be there.
All right. Well, it's at Lafayette Park, right across the street from the residence of the El Presidente. And I think I'm going to be one of the speakers, so I'll be easy enough to find. And we'll probably get arrested.
Well, I've been arrested before, so that's no problem.
Well, but, as long as they don't use truncheons.
Yeah, well, I've even had that experience. As a matter of fact, in a couple of Eastern countries, I was in Myanmar a few years ago, and I got truncheoned. So,
were you doing we still call it Burma. What were you doing there?
Well, we had a charter flight into Rangoon, and all we were doing, the crew and I, all we were doing is getting off the aircraft, and these blokes came running out with machine guns and truncheons and ordered us all to lie down on the tarmac as soon as we got off the aircraft. And we weren't doing it fast enough, apparently, so they hit us over the head with these batons, and then we lay on the tarmac for about an hour and a half until the Australian consul came out and...
Oh my God!
You know, rescued us. So,
right. Well, it's no fun when you're being hit by police, because you know there's not a whole lot that you can do that's not going to result in an escalation. And it's been my experience that it only goes one way, and that's right to the local lockup. But all right, listen, I'm coming up on a break here, Blue. I'm glad you have been to Madison. I'm glad you had a chance to see what was going on there.
It's very encouraging. I want to leave you with that note. It's very encouraging to see what the people and the Democrats and the legislature and the other unions and apparently now, as you say, the police have come on board. They're not going to cooperate with the governor in this. So that's encouraging.
It is indeed. It is indeed. All right. Have a good trip back. All right. Stay in touch.
Cheers, mate.
All right. Take care. Blue in Madison. Well, that's cool. I like that. All right, we have a break here. We do. Email from Democrats.com. This Saturday, we're drawing a line in the sand. The entire progressive movement is putting everything we have into one massive display of progressive solidarity nationwide. We won't let Scott Walker or any other billionaire-bought Tea Party governor break the unions. Unions created America's middle class, and if they disappear, we'll all end up as corporate slaves. So there you go. The entire progressive movement, Netroots, unions, environmentalists, community groups will hold solidarity rallies in major cities, including every state capital, this Saturday around noon. Go to Democrats.com if you want to, or what else did I say? ThinkProgress.org. Where else, Kathy, do you remember, for a list of sites? It's all over the place. Just check a few out. Do this. You got to do it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Why are we all fighting? Oh, why do we keep on lighting?
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Todd is calling from Cotati. Cotati? How do you say it?
Cotati, yeah.
Cotati, California. Todd was our second hour sponsor. Well, hi, Todd.
Hello there. I just wanted to say something about the guy that was shot out when he tried to do a mini protest.
Yeah.
The way we do it is we have three groups of four on three consecutive street corners. So you've got somebody watching your back. So nobody wants to pull a gun when somebody's out of range.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Todd is the owner of the site mini protests.com. You got some good ideas there. Yeah, I went to the site. And
thank you.
There's some really good stuff there. I think anybody who is interested in showing resistance but can't seem to find another 600 people to get out on the street, that's a great site.
Thank you. I appreciate it. One of the things that Democrats.com has got, hundreds of thousands of people going around, but they're all focused in one place, and the ditto heads never get a chance to see what the message is.
Right, right.
And the idea is that if you have just 60 people aligned in groups of 12, basically four on each of three street corners,
mm-hmm.
then you can have five mini protests in different parts of town and with a more involved message, because each mini protest has a main sign in the middle. Like the ones that I have for Wisconsin right now, the first main sign would read, Governor Walker is an FTR, final term Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Then a block later, it would say, main sign would say, Wisconsin budget shortfall due only to Walker's corporate tax giveaways.
Mm-hmm.
And then a block later, Walker's needless union busting will end his career. If you do this kind of thing close to a freeway on-ramp or a bridge on-ramp, you have people that are a captive audience, and they read the signs. We did it in Santa Rosa, just north of San Francisco, and trying to get some of Carly Fiorina's ills out there amongst the world,
mm-hmm.
and that was pretty effective. We got a lot of boos, but a lot of thumbs up.
Do you know what this reminds me of in a way, the way you were just describing it? Do you remember the Burma Shave signs? Are you old enough to remember those?
Actually, that's exactly the concept.
In fact,
on the website, it says that's what we're trying to do is having a running message. So you see one thing, and it's the Socratic method, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You set up one thing, and then you get them to, you link things together and make a logical conclusion by your third sign.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I'm percolating all these different signs in my mind, and I drive a paratransit van for a living,
mm-hmm.
and every once in a while something just pops up and I have to write it down. Today was the revelation was the notion of corp-servatives, as in conservatives, but mm-hmm. they're really corporatists, so put the two together.
When you were talking, I remember one that stuck with me all my life. Burma Shave series of signs has said, around the curve, lickety split, a nice car, wasn't it? I must have seen that when I was 10 years old, and it stayed with me. Around the curve, lickety split, nice car, wasn't it? Anyway, it's a good site, and thank you very much for the sponsorship.
My pleasure.
I really do appreciate that, Todd, and I hope people will come. You've got some great ideas there how to do this. Obviously, you've had some experience at this, right?
A little bit, but it's been hard to get people. I had some connections up in Portland, and I worked with Move On up there.
Mm-hmm.
Down here in this area, I've got connections with the Democrats, the local Democratic Party here. But it's just, there is a herding cats factor.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm trying to do is get people within Move On to think in terms of doing something like this nationally, because if you had our Democrats.com, if they put the word out and you had 70,000 mini protests around the country of just 12 people,
mm-hmm.
That would make an impact on all those ditto heads out there. But also, we have to present things as if it's a foregone conclusion that the Republicans are going to fail. And so, we have to put it out there that the battle is already won. And this is one way to do it.
That's a great idea. You start with the conclusion, and work backwards from that. I think that's the tactic that these Republicans have been using. Not Republicans, but the conservative movement, the corporatist movement. Yeah, the teabag movement. They start from the premise, look, we've succeeded. And the rest of us normal people stand around and go, what the hell are you talking about? But we focus on the wrong thing. You know, there's a parallel universe, apparently, so.
Yeah, well, we've spent all our time reacting. It's time to be the
leader. Time, that's right. The way it used to be, the way nature intended it. All right, Todd, thank you so much for the information. I hope lots of people come to your site just to get the information. It's great stuff. And thanks again for the sponsorship, okay?
I appreciate it. And I can make mini protests for anybody. All they have to tell me is what they want to talk about.
That sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, take care. Yeah, go to his website. You got to see this. I'm serious. A lot of people say, "Well, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what to do. I don't know. I don't know. You know, I can't get organized." Blah, 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 blah. You know, we all have those excuses, and they're valid. Those are good excuses, but they all disappear if you go to his website, miniprotests.com. Miniprotests.com. Check it out. Okay, we'll be right back.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
I'm gonna leave the city. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Emiliano Zapata of Providence, Rhode Island. The message: my grandfather once said, it is better to die on your feet than to live on your knees, truth seekers. All right, back to your phone calls for a moment here. There's a couple of other things I want to get to, but Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hi, Mark.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. We're going to be at a march tomorrow here in San Francisco across from City Hall. So, you know, everybody's behind Wisconsin, the whole country. They're not alone. And this is it, Mike. If it's not now, when?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
You know, this is the democracy, really. It's more than just a labor issue. It's the whole war, you know, of corporations and the rich and corrupt, you know, politicians and judges against the American people. And you know, we can't stop. We just got to keep this up. And let me tell you, I went to one Wednesday night, a rally in Oakland, and it was thrown together at the last minute. We had 300 people out there, and the energy was high. And, you know, people are just fed up. You know, it's just the anxiety and the corruption that's gone on in this country, the stealing from us and unfair tax laws and criminals that have been getting off the hook. It's coming to a head. If there's no justice, you know, being given, then, you know, the people are just going to take to the streets, and we're going to do what we got to do to get this right.
You know what I'm hoping is that other than the big cities, other than New York and San Francisco and Seattle and L.A., that there will be protests across the country. There's so much more at stake here. Not to minimize what's going on in Madison at all. I mean, that's the keystone of all this. But it's a much bigger issue. This 30-year long effort to destroy the unions and a 50-year long effort to turn the middle class into a bunch of serfs. I mean, this it's got to stop. I don't know what it would take to activate the American public, at least those of us who still feel motivated to fight. Maybe what has happened in Madison is the you know, the stroke that we need. Watching people in the Middle East and in North Africa demanding, you know, whatever their ulterior motives are, the primary motive is to get these goddamn dictators off their backs, and to watch people who are willing to take on the apparatus of the state in order to overthrow 30 and 40 year long regimes, and then we sit on our asses here in this country and whine while one thing after another continues to happen to us. I mean, I can't stand that, Mark. I mean, that drives me insane.
Well, you know, me too, Mike. I mean, I've been in the labor movement, and we fought corporations that wouldn't be fair to the workers and brought in union busters. And to me, what this government has done, or the Republican Party especially, has stolen from the middle class. You know, they run up the deficit to pay their friends, and then they say, we got to pay for it. Well, you know, it gets to a point when this has gone on in this country so long with the appointed presidents and war criminals and the stealing and the corruption, and then they want Social Security. There, you know, it's gotten to the point where, you know, they got a lot of pissed off people here, and if we're not going to get justice from the Obama administration, we're not going to get justice from Eric Holder, then, you know, people are going to take to the streets, and we're not going to stop, not till these cockroaches are done with. That's how I see it, Mike.
Well, I see it that way too, Mark. I really do. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate what you had to say. Take care. Good luck tomorrow. Raise hell. Do whatever you have to do. Thanks, Mark. You know, one of the things that drove me crazy and drove you crazy, if you are of a certain mindset, if you do believe in justice and the rule of law, was what happened in this country. It was December 12, 2000, when five neo-fascist justices in the U.S. Supreme Court stopped the vote counting in the state of Florida and declared George W. Bush the president of the United States. And nothing happened. Nothing. And then, less than a year later, when this country was attacked and thousands of people were murdered, and it became fairly obvious fairly quickly, without getting into some great big goddamn conspiracy argument. You don't have to get into that. Here's all you have to know: the president of the United States and his state security system and his massive military and the massive intelligence allowed this country to be attacked in the worst way since the British attack during the War of 1812 on our goddamn soil. And then, I'm not trying to get all jingoistic on your asses here, but I'll tell you what, the way that was spun around by Bush and Cheney and the rest of these dogs, they're the ones who either let it happen or made it happen. And like I say, you don't have to go through all this stuff about collapsing buildings. These son of a bitches were charged with protecting the United States. And they did not. And everything, single pissy right winger from that day to this, you people just turn my stomach. Your boy. Let this country be ripped open right in its goddamn underbelly. Your boy. Your killer. December 12th, 2000 and September 11th, 2001. And I'll tell you what, you right-wingers, you conservatives, you punk asses, you cockroaches, I don't care what you do or what you say, you and your twisted little governors like this Walker prick out in Wisconsin, I don't care what you do or say. You're political philosophy has brought us to this point. Your philosophy, you bastards. I'll tell you what. There's some stuff coming in this country. You know it as well as I do. You know it. You feel it. You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. It's very difficult to sit on this 25-cent radio program every night and try to remain rational. You know, I look around at what is happening to my country, and I look at those two dates. You know, I think to myself, December 12, 2000, and none of us got off our asses and converged on Washington and surrounded the Supreme Court building, 1 million of us, 5 million of us, and said, no, goddammit, no. We didn't do it, did we? So a year later, these incompetent bastards allowed this country to be ripped to pieces and 3,000 people killed. You don't need to get all involved in whether or not a building collapsed in its footprint. All you have to do is look at the death and destruction that the Bush-Cheney criminal enterprise brought to this country. That's all you have to do. And then look at the torture, and then look at the wars that they started. What in the hell has happened to this country? Then you have some piece of human crap like this Beck pissant raving on television to his audience. There's some things going to happen. There's some things that are going to happen, and it's way past due for these things to have happened. Way past due. So you right-wingers, you right-wingers, you so-called baggers and conservatives and you corporatists and you little pissants who don't care who steps on your face, you love it. Just remember those two dates. And I don't care what you say, you scum suckers. When the Supreme Court gave the presidency to George Bush, and a year later, that rat bastard allows this country to be attacked, who are you going to blame that on, huh? To hell with you.
We two sometimes need to paint our homes. The pressures are incredible and no one seems to care. We moved our plants to Haiti and now we have to move from there. They're clamoring for more than a dollar a day from Malaysia to Mexico. At that rate, pretty soon there'll be no place for us to go. Bosses of the world, unite. Don't just sit there, fight, fight, fight. Don't be trampled by the masses. They think they can kick our asses. The candidates and Congress
and the homeless just walk right in.
Where is the outrage? Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Where's the outrage? Did you leave the studio there? This hour has been sponsored by either John O'Connor or Emiliano Zapata of Providence, Rhode Island. Take your pick. Probably both of them. And the sponsor says, my grandfather once said, it is better to die on your feet than to live on your knees. True seekers. Thanks, John Emiliano. I appreciate it very, very much. Thanks to all three of our sponsors tonight, Stephanie and Todd and John. Deep gratitude and appreciation. And before we run out of time, I want to mention our crew again, people who provide so much to this program. Our technical advisor is Ben Birch, White Rose Society, who provides the he does the podcast content. Does he do that? He didn't do anything? What does he do? He streams the show from White Rose Society. You can go ahead and open your mic. He streams the show.
He streams the show, and he also creates the podcast, but technically you provide the content.
Well, thanks to Ben Birch. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Economic Affairs is Bruce Enberg. You know him as Prairie 2, prairienumeral2.com. Education is Kate Petrini. By the way, Kay's, the text of her latest rants are up at her website, kaysreportcard.com. Kays, K-A-Y-S, reportcard.com. Check it out. Check out these people's websites. Will you do that for me? Their blog sites, prairienumeral2.com, kaysreportcard.com. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, both of whom we just haven't heard from a lot, have we? I know Bridget is busy. I know Bob is busy, but they are the, maybe there's just nothing for them to do. They are the ethics advisors to this program. Maybe they just decided, well, he's okay. Anyway, thanks to Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. And of course, Kathy Bay, who is the executive producer and pretty much a broadcast engineer. When everything falls apart, Kathy is down underneath the all the control panel over there trying to figure out what the hell's wrong this time. Oh, my God. Yeah, she who must be obeyed. Who said that? Jim. All right.
Damn straight.
Yeah, damn straight. Sean is in Battleground, Washington, listening on KPOJ. Sean, hello.
Kathy rocks, by the way.
Yeah, well, oh, my God, you would say that, wouldn't you? Now she'll be insufferable when we get off the air. Oh,
hey,
that's
Mike.
Right. Yeah, she does rock.
Mike, I forgot to call in last week. February 18th was the 20-year anniversary of Gregory Levy committing self-immolation to protest the first Gulf War. He was Ellen Goodman's nephew.
That's right. That's right.
I was reminded of it because of Mohamed Bouazizi of Tunisia was the one who started off all these revolutions in North Africa.
By doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right.
But anyway, Mike, the reason I called tonight, though, was one of the things I find most sickening about watching the decent and modest people of Madison, Wisconsin fight for their very economic lives is that it was only a month ago, I think, that the FCIC report came out, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission report was out, and it pretty much laid it all out about how all this capitalist gibberish about an ownership society and getting everyone into their own homes and, you know, this whole right-wing agenda, you know, the corrupt ratings agencies that were stamping AAA on all these bonds.
Right.
And what I wanted, one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen was when the AIG bonuses were paid, I think it was about 2 years ago. I can't remember if it was Dean Baker's organization or if it was Acorn, but they actually bust people out to the AIG executives' homes. Like, I want to know where Lloyd Blankfein lives.
I want to know
where John Mack lives. I want to know where Ken Lewis of Bank of America lives.
Right.
I think that was the most brilliant thing, and that would put the focus back on those responsible for why the country is in the condition that it's in. The people from the New York Stock Exchange and Wall Street, everyone should be focused on them. Those demons, those flying monkey punk asses.
Yeah, that is so true. The problem is what it's always been, where it concerns trying to confront these people. I will be in the street tomorrow. I'll be in the street in Washington, D.C. on March the 19th. But these people, the ones you just mentioned, they don't give a damn. I mean, 2 million people could take to the streets. And what
they're
they
on their yachts, or they're in the south of France, or do they send their children to like private schools in Switzerland? It's like they don't even care about the United States anymore.
No, it doesn't mean anything to them. So they have to the system. That's the thing. You know, I always kind of in ignorance, believe that the system was reformable. The system is not reformable. The, system in this country needs to be changed. And in order to change, you have to do what the people in Tunisia or Libya or Egypt or any of these countries that are going through these upheavals now. I don't mean to compare, you know, my little life with somebody who has been struggling for 30 years under the dictator Mubarak or under the psycho Gaddafi. I don't mean to compare myself. I'm just saying you have to reach a point where you say the system doesn't work for me in my context, in my reality, in my society, and by God, I'm going to change it.
And you know what, Muck? I hate those people that support this system. I'm sorry if that makes me a bad person for all you New Age folks out there, but I hate people that support capitalism.
I hear you. Hey, I got to go. Sean, thank you. I appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot for checking in. Take care. Take care. I'll see you all Monday. All right. Don't forget, tomorrow, just show up. 90% of life is just showing up. And have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Take care. Keep it lit. I'll see you Monday. I'm Mike Malloy.